Welcome to the most electrifying must listen to podcast in sports entertainment. Welcome to FFC. I am your host, the vivacious, bubblicious, effervescent Damian Ellinghouse, accompanied as always by good friend and lover of spicy little ditties, Ryan Doyle.
I don't have to host, right?
No, you don't have to host.
Oh my God, thank God.
The hostile takeover failed.
It's done.
It's done. But ladies and gentlemen, nonetheless, we are here. And boy, do we have a lot to talk about. Now,
glad we took a week break.
Yeah, normally I wouldn't apologize for taking a week break because you've come to expect it. And also, you know, fuck you. You don't make the product. All right. But this was a conscious decision we made this time to take a week off. And it worked out to our schedules anyway. But this was a conscious decision, as obviously last week we would have been recording during the figuring out of the AEW Interim World Heavyweight Championship, and we didn't want to do that. Today is Road Rager and you know, an equally important build to Forbidden Door, but waiting a week gave us oh so many things, Ryan. It just gave us oh so many things.
Hello, so, Apollo. Where shall I begin?
Yes. There is no time to dilly-dally, so we're going to get right into this bad boy. So, Ryan, what have you come stocked with today?
Breaking news. Well, have we seen the end of Vince?
No, what's
your
beer?
Is this the end of Vinnie Mac? Oh, what am I drinking? Oh, okay.
Duh.
Well, sorry. A little too soon. I'm so excited to discuss. All right. In honor of Father's Day, I have a Papa beer here. It's a product of Germany. It is a Perlenbacher.
Ah, I love it's a Pilsner. I love the Bavarian Pilsners.
My dad's like, I got Polish beer in the fridge. And I'm like, oh, okay. Do you have like the, I always forget how to pronounce it, Zwiecek, something like that?
Zwiecek,
yeah. And he's like, go check it out. I'm like, Dad, this is the opposite of Polish.
Not great to confuse Poland and Germany, Dad. There's some history there. Well, that's okay. You know, Papa can't be expected to know all the geography.
But now it is 2022, and honestly, our society isn't great. At least Germany was able to turn it around a little bit. But they do make a fine Pilsner.
This just in, Ryan makes excuse for Nazi Germany.
No. Nay.
And here we are, us Jew folk, trusting you as an ally.
No. I did not say that. I said American society is trending in the wrong direction. So I can't really be piling on the Germans right now when they just want to release their innocent Perlenbacher.
What year does it say it was brewed since? Like 1417?
I love that. Like, how do they exist? They don't have a year.
Fake Pilsner.
1322, we'll just say that.
Yeah, there you go.
Brewed by monks in 1322.
I guess I would call this like a dad beer for millennials or elder millennials, because I got the good old-fashioned Brooklyn Summer.
There you go. That's what I drank on the last episode with Sweeney.
Yeah, it's a classic
honor
boy.
Of a kickoff to summer.
Well, there you go. So this is to Sweeney. So, Ryan, we do not crack. We toast. We toast to just the greatest sport, the sport that keeps on giving, our beloved professional wrestling.
That's right, folks. We have a most important, two important two events to discuss, but fuck that, because we got news, baby. We got news. Spicy news. Cheers. All right, Damien. What shall we start with?
Breaking news coming in hot off the presses. Well, folks, it turns out that Vinnie Mac's been doing a little bit of a side booking, working in some territories that I don't think he's supposed to be working in. That's right. World Wrestling Entertainment's board is investigating a $3 million hush money settlement that CEO Vince McMahon paid a woman over an alleged affair, the Wall Street Journal reported Wednesday, citing documents and people familiar with the matter. The agreement, which was struck in January, is intended to prevent the woman, who had worked as a paralegal for the company, from discussing her relationship with McMahon or making critical statements about the chief executive, the journal added. So Ryan showed me this, and my reaction was, does this even make the top 10 most salacious things Vince McMahon has done? Which I don't know that it does. Here's the thing, Ryan, right?
Yes.
In just about like any, you know, maybe like any other sport or industry, this kind of like public news would probably be a big deal, right? If this was like, I don't know, Dan Snyder or, you know, Roger Goodell or someone like this, like, you'd probably be like, ooh, scandal. But because it's Vince McMahon, you wonder to yourself, does this really rock the boat at all? What are your thoughts?
Well, this is pretty much like standard fare for any like CEO, right?
Yeah, it's just when it becomes public.
Just remove the name Vince McMahon, and this is page 16 of the New York Times.
Your video is doing crazy shit right now.
Oh, shit. Solomon Crowe is invading me. Remember that one random time they did it at WrestleMania? They had, like, the video glitch, and they're like, Solomon Crowe!
Go on.
So, yeah, this is, like, another day in the life of business America. Here's the thing. Yes, you are correct. This is probably like number 22 on Vince's list. But because we have the attitude of LOL wrestling, none of that stuff that we know, the public knows. So that's what Vince really has to be worried here. And the sad part about this is Vince is only going to get in trouble from like a legal standpoint if he used WWE money. That's really what the board cares about. They do not care about this woman. God knows Vince probably has a litany of NDAs. All those guys have a litany of NDAs. Little secret, Vince isn't with Linda anymore. You know what's funny? I missed it completely until someone brought this up. Vince said my former wife on his interview with Pat McAfee. Didn't name Linda. So, yeah. A little sad about that. Mom and dad broke up, man.
Are we sure?
Yeah, they're definitely not together anymore. No way.
Yeah.
I think they only come together for like legal purposes and like, you know, photo ops with Donald Trump, but
Yeah, okay, there you go.
Anyway,
well, here's the thing.
Continue.
So this is not Vince's first run-in with sexual misconduct allegations. On April 3rd, 1992, Rita Chatterton, a former referee noted for her stint as Rita Marie in the WWF and for being the first female referee in the WWF, made an appearance on Geraldo Rivera's show, Now It Can Be Told. She claimed that on July 16th, 1986, McMahon tried to force her to perform oral sex on him in the limousine and then raped her. And on February 1st, 2006, McMahon was accused of sexual harassment by a worker at a tanning bar in Boca Raton. At first, the charge appeared to be discredited because McMahon was in Miami at that time, but it was soon clarified that the incident was reported to police on the day of the Rumble, but actually took place the day before, but no charges were filed as a result of the investigation. Now, to be clear, the relationship is said to be consensual, right? To Ryan's point, right? The salacious part is this. Like, nobody gives a shit that Vince McMahon cheated on Linda because, like, no way. You mean the billionaire wrestling carny didn't stay faithful to his wife the whole... No way. The guy who did the whole Attitude Era and ran an entire division of women pretended that he cared about the wrestling and just paraded them around in bra and panties.
Are you kink shaming Vince?
No, hey, look, you're into what you're into. But you know what I always say? Don't force your fetish on other people. And in this case, McMahon forced his fetish onto millions of people, just like Quentin Tarantino does every time he releases a movie. Stop showing us Uma Thurman's feet. It's weird. I don't like them as much as you do. Anyway, Ryan is absolutely correct. The only real thing that is of interest here is, did Vince McMahon use company money? However, I think it could also be argued that, like, because there are these whole things with publicly traded corporations and board of directors where, like, if somebody acts in a way that could drive down the stock of that company, that's when you start talking about, will there be a buyout? It's like what happens every time Elon Musk sends out a tweet. Yeah. So that's the interesting part.
It wasn't the other 80 things. It was this.
However, the investigation also revealed other non-disclosure agreements related to misconduct claims by other women against McMahon and Johnny Ace, John Laurinaitis, which,
not Johnny Ace.
Oh, no. Who could have seen this coming? I'm just here for the schadenfreude. You know, I'm just here to, I just want to watch the hyper elite squirm a little bit, which of course they won't. And, you know, they go to bed surrounded by money and, you know, knowing that their generational wealth will outlast the living world. But, you know, I can enjoy myself for a little bit, right?
Yeah, we'll see. You know, I said it was going to go one of two ways. Vince is going to resign by the end of the week, or if this is just going to pass. I'm just here for the Marcellus Wallace briefcase of other things that may come to light.
Yeah. Just wait till we hear about all the other shit. The interesting part about this, I guess, really, is that unlike the other two things, there is no, like, oh, we don't know if this happened or not. It's like, nah, this happened. This is here. It's only a matter of the details.
Jerry McDevitt didn't even deny it.
Yeah, it's
meaning
it's
like
just,
he just denied the allegation that Vince used money, company money.
Yeah, that's
which
it.
Is,
like
it's pretty fucking.
Yeah, that's the interesting part. That's the interesting part is like there is no maybe in this. It's like these things happened, these NDAs were signed, shit went down, and now it's just a matter of what details come out from there.
Not shooting down the passed around like a toy allegation. Just Vince didn't use money.
However, what became of the other NDAs with Johnny Ace and him is totally up for grabs. I got bad news for you, though, AEW fans. This will not be the fall of WWE.
God.
You're not going to watch Vince McMahon stripped down and beaten, walk through the streets while a bell rings like Cersei Lannister. It's a deep cut Game of Thrones reference for all you old folk out there. So, you know, don't get your hopes up. Nothing really ever happens to the rich.
I do wonder if...
Did you know that Vince co-owns Tap Out?
No, I didn't know that.
He co-owns Tap Out.
Oh, yeah, wait. No, that was their brand. They bought Tap Out, and then they made it like an Under Armour brand. Not like the old Tap Out shirts that bros wore in high school.
It was like an MMA thing, but, you know, who knew? Okay, whatever. Well, anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, so like, what was I going to say? Do you think Stephanie, this has really anything relating to that she got out before the storm is going to hit?
You know, no, probably not.
Yeah, probably not, right? She doesn't give a fuck.
I also had like, I shouldn't say this on the air, but I'm going to. Who's going to cancel me? My first thought was, oh, that's what she was talking about when she said she was leaving. And my thought was that she was the affair.
It could also be like,
listen, he hangs out with Donnie enough. I'm not here to that. Who knows?
Well, you know, he's going to throw fucking Johnny Ace under the bus in like 2 seconds. Though.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Oh, Johnny Ace is goodbye.
Which I'm here for. So,
yeah, hopefully Bruce Prichard.
Well, he'll fucking slime his way. Don't worry about that. You don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, no, he'll be fine. All right. So anyway, off of the rumor mill onto the sports reel. Ryan, so many things have happened, like how I'm going to sneeze.
You're fired. Thank you.
I'm exposing the product. Right? People, this is breaking kayfabe. People aren't supposed to sneeze. I don't think I've ever watched somebody sneeze on a wrestling program, now that I think about it.
I mean, It's quite amazing that, yeah. Like, all the live tape of wrestling that we watch, nobody has,
never seen a sneeze.
Yeah, it's weird.
Nobody's ever gotten, hiccups during a
promo.
Yeah,
it's amazing, actually.
I need to stop thinking about this. I'm going to go down a rabbit
back and watch, fucking 1,100 hours of tape.
Yeah. All right, so here's the deal. Three major things happened in these past few weeks. First off, you had Hell in a Cell, which was better than expected with a main event that probably isn't fair to say it over-delivered, but, I don't think anybody really expected that level of quality.
Wait, before we do that, should we talk about the other news story or Simon worth bringing
which
up?
Which one?
Jeff.
Oh, you know what? All right. We'll get there. So Hell in a Cell happened, which has some major implications for the WWE titles moving forward, at least in the short term, or short to medium term. AEW, CM Punk broke his leg or fucked his foot up jumping into the crowd after he won the title off of Hangman. And now we have an interim championship match happening between Jon Moxley and Hiroshi Tanahashi. And Dominion happened, where in probably the most shocking turn of events of the last maybe year, the Switchblade himself, Jay White, leader of Bullet Club, defeated Kazuchika Okada in a 35-minute barn burner.
Huge.
To become the IWGP World Heavyweight Champion, the first ever undisputed Grand Slam champion, and radically altering what to expect at the upcoming pay-per-view Forbidden Door, which is happening next weekend. And we're not really going to be able to do a preview of it because they haven't fleshed out this card. I'm assuming they're building towards it tonight and it'll be solidified, but we got a way to go, so we'll talk a little bit about it. But Hell in a Cell, I don't want to spend too much time really talking about the event, but it is definitely worth mentioning two things. First off, the six-man tag match between Judgment Day, consisting of Edge, Damian Priest, and Rhea Ripley, against former leaders of the Bullet Club, Finn Balor, and AJ Styles, teaming up with Liv Morgan. Match was good, but that's not really the important part. You know, Judgment Day 101 after Finn Balor nearly pinned Edge, but ultimately was defeated after being ganged up on. But what really mattered was the next night when Finn Balor came out, announced that he was joining the Judgment Day, and then in a shocking turn of events, turns out that he was actually usurping Edge and is now the leader of Judgment Day. It's the first time he's leading a faction. Like, he did kind of do, like, he was with the Good Brothers for a little bit, but I don't really count that. And this is the first time that he's ever been heel on the main roster.
Yeah.
So that's the biggest thing to come out of that. And
can I give a hot take?
You can give a hot take.
It's going to work out so much better this way.
Probably so.
I know it's ham-fisted WWE style where it's just plans change, but it's going to work out so much better because two things. A, the Bauer need a little bit of a rejuvenation. And B, we have waning days of Edge. I don't know how much longer the guy is going to go. But I want my Edge coming out to Alter Bridge, the real Alter Bridge song. I want the smoke. I want my Final Destination Edge run. So.
Yeah, and Balor needs this kind of momentum far more than Edge does, which is really sad. It's really sad to say that.
Yeah, it is.
Finn Balor should not need this level of like momentum, but he does, because you can't necessarily say he's been mismanaged, but the main roster never capitalized on him after his initial Universal Championship one day reign. They like never went back to that well, and it was never quite understood why. But with him now leading a faction, getting to kind of bring back in the Return of the Prince gimmick he did in NXT when he really rejuvenated himself. Give Edge some time off. Let Finn do this and see what happens from here. The problem is that it only really matters if Finn gets to start going after top belts, or like at least having a meaningful title reign, which whether they let him do that with Roman, especially heel is anybody's guess. But whatever, that's cool. But of course, the big thing in Hell in a Cell was Seth Rollins versus Cody Rhodes. Yes.
Can you please come out on Ray's shoulders?
Oh yeah, give me the OG Bullet Club Prince Devitt riding on Bad Luck Fale's shoulders. Yes, give me him riding on Rhea Ripley's shoulders.
Because like obviously it would make more sense for him to go on Punishment Martinez. Sorry.
No.
Jesus Christ. Did I just
What are you doing?
I dead named him with his ROH.
What are you doing here? Wasn't even that big a deal in Ring of Honor. Well, anyway.
Yeah, sorry.
To move off of Ryan's incredible lack of tact, the big news of Hell in a Cell 2022 was Seth Rollins versus Cody Rhodes in a Hell in a Cell.
Our hero.
Now, here's the thing. This feud did not need a Hell in a Cell, mainly because Cody won the first two matches, and it was weird to do a third. However, the build was good because, look, Seth and Cody, they play their roles really well. They're both really great promos. And so, you know, it was an easy sell. It's then announced that Cody tears his pectoral and, according to WWE, rips it right off the bone, which, like, don't love how many times they said that. They said that exact phrase way too many fucking times.
Off the bone! Off the bone!
Ripped it off the bone! Ripped it clean off the bone! Really weird. But he announces that he's going through with the match, comes out. First off, Seth coming out with the fucking dusty polka dots. So good.
Oh, great.
Seth's character
amazing,
is,
dude.
He's just so, he just gets it.
This is
so
my
great.
Favorite iteration of Seth. Like, you could have said this last year, but now you can really say it this year.
Yeah, no, this is like peak
like,
Seth.
Dude's
this
on fire,
so
man.
And the crowd knows it too. But then Cody comes out and reveals his real fucked up looking pec. Which the only time you've seen something similar in wrestling was Triple H.
And he had to get helped by five people out of the fucking ring.
But Cody
to be fair,
Rhodes,
it was his, oh no, you're talking about Saudi Arabia. Never mind. I was talking about
Saudi Arabia that happened. Yeah,
he tore his pectoral.
Are you talking about
when
he
tore
his quad?
Yeah. I got things confused.
So yeah, he comes out and his chest is just black and blue and looking, God, so fucked up.
Oh, the reveal, baby. That reveal.
Eh, so good.
Crowd was eating it up, man.
Before we continue, you didn't talk about this with Sweeney, did you?
No, this is, we re-recorded the
It was pre, right?
The week of, yes.
It was pre, that's what I thought, that's what I thought. I don't listen to the product, folks.
Dirty secret.
Very open secret, really. Never listen to your own product, guys. It'll never.
I hate my voice.
It'll never hit the same. But proceeds to have this, like, over 20 minute at least, banger of a goddamn match. Corey Graves is on fire with his commentary throughout the whole thing. And for once, Corey drops the whole ultra heel Bobby Jr., you know, shout out Shook Crew, fucking commentary gig, and just like calls it. And he really does a fantastic job of it.
And got a shout out by Meltzer for it.
Which goes to show,
even Byron, I think, was left on his own at one point, and he did great. We obviously know the open secret that Michael Cole, when not having a geriatric man screaming in his ear, can really deliver it home with his calling, too.
Yep. I think Corey's, like, big call at the end was, like, a fallen angel on broken wings, like, ascends to the heavens or some shit, which is, like, cool.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Say the line! I came up with this this morning, damn it.
Seth works an incredibly safe yet hard-hitting looking, and like to be clear, some of the bumps Cody took definitely fucking sucked. He's like getting slapped in his broken pec, but there is no one I think you would trust at this point more than like Seth Rollins, who works an incredibly safe match. Cody plays the babyface underdog so well in this match. And look, it's an open secret that I am no Cody fan, but I've always said it's really not because of Cody's ability in the ring. And look, you give credit where it's due. His presentation in WWE, his connection with the crowd in this feud with Seth really cemented him as like, okay, this is probably going to be the guy to beat Roman and probably should. However, he wins the match after finally hitting a pedigree, hits three crossroads, and then beats Seth Rollins with a sledgehammer. Although, brings out a bull rope, which Corey points out is the Rhodes family heirloom. And also, like, they mentioned Dustin. I don't think they mentioned him by name, but they say, like, his brother, so that was kind of cool.
Yeah, you might. I mean, like, AEW is now canon within WWE.
There's no reason to pretend.
Plus, he's a
Dustin
legend. He's one of your legends. Like, fuck it.
It is what.
And plus, he was Dustin before he even went to AEW. You know what I mean?
Very true. Very true. So, yeah, Cody's going to be out for 9 months, which now means we have no idea what's going to be up with the main event scene.
Kind of a shame.
I mean,
let's be honest. I mean, it's a shame because we're going to be robbed of character work that's critical to WWE at this time.
Yes. However, what that does mean is there's a greater chance, not a very high chance, but a greater chance that somebody else beats Roman. Maybe you get the return of Seth Rollins, Mr. Money in the Bank. Maybe you get Nakamura to get a proper build. Maybe you build Finn as more of a tweener. I don't know. There's ways you could go. Whether they do it is anyone's guess. But it leaves Cody plenty of time to get back for the Rumble and then face somebody at Mania. So, you know. Speedy recovery, great match, one of the best Hell in a Cell matches I've seen in a long time, really compelling stuff, and you know, go watch it. The pay-per-view was solid overall, but you should watch that match. It's a good example of how when WWE trusts its performers to like use their talent and tell a story in the ring, how effective the product can be. That's my take off of it.
And at first I thought like Off the Bone was like just a kayfabe thing, but that probably was the only reason why he was able to work the match, because what else is going to happen at that point, you know?
That was like some people's take is like you can only get worse. It's just like you can't get much worse. It's just pain, whatever.
Right.
There were some arguments about like, was it safe for WWE to let him work? But you know what, guys? Let's not start doing that and be AEW fans, okay? Let's not be hypocrites here. So anyway, that leads us to I think it's worth talking about these items together, right? So
let's do Dominion first.
Okay, so Dominion happened on June 6th. Is that what the date was? What was last Sunday?
The 5th.
8th?
5th.
Is it the 5th?
Yes.
Okay. So on the 5th, we had one of the marquee events of the New Japan calendar, Dominion, at Osaka Joe Hall. And this is for sure, this is an event, because remember, New Japan doesn't do pay-per-views. This is an event that always, almost always, has some sort of huge, like, roster-shifting event.
Is this almost like their SummerSlam?
Yeah, that's probably the best equivalent. Dominion's, I would say Dominion is probably like their second biggest. I would say that from an event standpoint, the only things I can think of that are bigger than Dominion are probably like Wrestle Kingdom and then maybe the G1 Finals. The G1 Final is almost always a huge deal. But yeah, Dominion's like their big fucking thing. So, and I'm sorry, it was not the 5th. It was this past Sunday. It was the 12th.
Okay, I figured. I didn't think it was that far behind.
No, yeah, I knew it was this Sunday. I just didn't remember. So, whatever. You had some tag matches at the beginning, and probably the most significant thing about them was that Ace Austin was there, as well as Francesco Akira and TJP, and Ace Austin joining Bullet Club as X Division champ, whatever. And then Doc Gallows versus Yano. Yano won. Great fun. 4 minutes. It started with the never open weight six-man tag team championships. Suzuki Goons team of Yoshinobu Kanemaru, El Desperado, and Zack Sabre Jr. taking on the current champions in their fourth defense, House of Tortures, Yujiro Takahashi, Show, and Evil. The match was fine. It was 9 minutes long. I don't have anything really to complain about it. I don't really think the Never Belts are... I don't think House of Torture is doing them any favors because this match was like real egregious of interference, but yeah, whatever. It's not that big a deal. And like Sho got the pin on Kanemaru. So it's not like Despy or Sabre Jr. took any like big losses. Then you had the IWGP Tag Team Championship, Great Okada, Jeff Cobb, after being robbed by Chase Owens and Bad Luck Fale, get their revenge. This match was a little bit better than it probably had any reason to. Chase Owens might be a slime bag in real life, but he's upped his game in the ring. There's some shit.
I wouldn't be fucking around too much, Chase. You've been riding on the coattails the last fucking couple
you
years,
know what?
Pal.
New Japan loves him because he's like kind of like this old school heel, and he's like Bullet Club, not OG, but he's, you know, old. So whatever.
Is it fair to say he took Hangman's spot?
He was there before Hangman. I would say I don't really know whose spot I'd put him in. He's Chase Owens. He's the crown jewel. That's the spot he's in. He's in his own spot. And Fale, you know, Fale's Fale. Anyway, Jeff Cobb, the big highlight really is that Jeff Cobb suplexed Fale like it was fucking nothing and then hit an absolutely monstrous tour of the islands on Chase Owens. So they retain, which is what needed to happen. So then, right, in the wake of, so if we go back a week ago, several days before Dominion to Dynamite, after CM Punk announces that he's not relinquishing the title, but he can't compete for a while after messing up his foot, that Tony Khan's decided he's going to keep the championship and they're going to do more like what they do in MMA and have an interim champion. And how they do this is they do a battle royale in the beginning, and the battle royale winner goes on to face Jon Moxley, who they called the number one contender. He was actually like fourth, but they said that his win over Daniel Garcia put him over Wardlow and shit. Whatever. It's fake sports, I guess. Don't read too much into it. So Kyle O'Reilly ended up winning that battle royale. There were some real great spots in there. I think the final four were Andrade, Rey Fénix, Kyle O'Reilly, and Wheeler Yuta. Yuta had the crowd going. He's real over with them. Fénix was an absolute star. I think I might have preferred to see Andrade win this, but Kyle O'Reilly was a fine choice too. Kyle O'Reilly and Moxley go on to have a match in the main event that was like a fun, hard-hitting affair. It was compared to Moxley's Bloodsport match with Tom Lawler, Filthy Tom Lawler, New Japan Strong Champion. And so Jon Moxley goes on to probably main event or close to or semi-main event Forbidden Door against one of these two. New Japan on their side announces that it'll be, instead of just handing Tanahashi the match as Punk was initially challenged by him, they were instead going to do Hirooki Goto versus Hiroshi Tanahashi. Here's a fun fact. Hirooki Goto is like 2-11 all time against Tanahashi. So, shocker, Goto did not win. However, this match was terrific. Goto still is like a really great competitor, and man, the last 2 years have really been something for Tana. Like, just his last year, year and a half, he's really had some terrific matches. God bless him. So, Tanahashi advances, and finally, Jon Moxley gets his long-awaited match against the Galactic Ace of New Japan. It, at the main event, or maybe co-main event, at Forbidden Door, June 26th, you have Hiroshi Tanahashi versus Jon Moxley for the AEW World Heavyweight Championship, but the interim one. So, good stuff. Shingo Takagi took on Taichi in a rematch of their KOPW 2022 match, where Shingo took the trophy from Taichi. And so they had this really fun gimmick. Last time it was I think it was like a first to 30 count match where it was like the pinfalls were cumulative. And Shingo won that. It was a really cool, interesting gimmick. And this time,
like a 2 out of 3 falls.
No, so this time it was a 10-minute as many pins as many like.
That's interesting. I don't think I've ever seen that before.
I'm not sure that I have either. It was like as many pins as you can get in 10 minutes, or as many counts. Shingo ended up winning 11-10. It was the last like minute was really hectic. These two have really great chemistry, and I just love, you know, no disrespect to the true ace of New Japan, Toriano, but I'm happy to see the KOPW trophy actually treated like something that people would want to fight for. And Taichi and Shingo have done a great job of like elevating it to the point where like people want to go after Shingo. So love that. Then the co-main event, you had the Never Open Weight Championship match of Tama Tonga versus the Machine Gun Carl Anderson, Carl Anderson's first singles match back in New Japan. Machine Gun ends up going over Tama, and while you're sad because, you know, it was Tama's first defense, credit where it's due, the Good Brothers have not felt this relevant probably since they left Bullet Club in 2016.
You gotta use them if you're gonna have them.
And you know what, man? They look, it does just feel right. Having Carl Anderson and Luke Gallows in Bullet Club does just feel right. And
it's because he was sitting at that bar in Lynbrook, New York, and Damien came up to him asking for an autograph, and he said, "You know what? I'm done with this shit. I'm
actually, what happened is Damien said, "Can I get a two sweet?" And Luke Gallows two sweeted me, and he thought, "Huh, two sweet. I've been two sweeting in America. What if I two sweeted in Japan?"
It's all you, so, brother. Thanks to you.
Much like how Jay White is the catalyst of professional wrestling, we are the catalyst of professional wrestling as well. We're co-catalysts, codalists. So you're welcome. So the main event, Kazuchika Okada, in his fifth defense of the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship, going up against Jay White, returning from a nearly year-long stint in America, in which he embarked on a US of J tour, going all over the place, going to AEW and going to Impact and going to New Japan Strong and just taking on anybody and anybody. 36 minutes this match went. And in a true shock, a true genuine shock that I'm not sure almost anyone saw coming, Jay White, after a battle in which Jay gets a little bit of help from Gato, but largely does this on his own, counterpunches Okada over and over again, dominating at points, selling like a madman, acting like an anime villain, and just fucking jawing at Okada the whole time. At one point, putting Okada in the TTO, the Tanahashi tap out, all the while looking at Tanahashi at commentary and saying, "What's up, Tana? What's up, Tana?" Just great heel work. In a stunning last couple of minutes, Jay White turns a Rainmaker into the Blade Runner. 1, 2, 3. Jay White is the new IWGP World Heavyweight Champion. Ryan, this is gigantic. This is a huge shift in New Japan. It has massive, massive effects on Forbidden Door. And let's talk about that a little bit.
One of the most perfectly executed decisions I've ever seen New Japan do, because once Kenny left, they said, okay, we have to fill this gigantic hole that was left by a result of him leaving. And I think, I mean, Jay White was kind of getting pushed before that, but he beat Okada when Okada had red hair, right? When he was a little lost.
That's enough, guys. They get it. It's an emergency. yeah, I believe his first win over Okada was in the G1. Jay White's push started when he took the U.S. title off of Kenny while he was still in Bullet Club, mm-hmm. while he was like in Bullet Club recruited.
Right. And they couldn't just exactly send him to the stratosphere immediately, but they delicately handled him the last 2 years to get him up, to prime him up for the spot. I certainly did not expect him to go over Okada, but now you have a clear and distinct number one established gaijin in New Japan. And now If he wasn't before, Jay White is going to be a worldwide household name in the wrestling community.
It is funny because you say that, but like, Jay White immediately beat Tanahashi for the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship after he beat Kenny for it. So he was actually launched into the stratosphere, but he lost it like either in his first or second defense. And then,
But against
say,
like Okada though, because Okada's been like against, one of the most protective.
No, against Tanahashi. Oh yeah, yeah. Drops it to Okada at Madison Square Garden. Yes.
Right.
Yeah. So it's no. But Ryan's point stands that Jay came back, and like when he came back as the Switchblade in Chaos, it was a really big deal when he turned on Okada and Gato turned on Okada and he joins Bullet Club, takes the belt, the US belt off of Kenny, then takes the IWGP Heavyweight Championship off of Tanahashi, drops it to Okada after single-handedly selling out Madison Square Garden. And then, you know, proceeds to have these like masterful feuds with Naito and Ibushi. So Jay White has been positioned as one of the top guys in New Japan for a while. But after he lost to Ibushi in Wrestle Kingdom 2021, he cuts this really emotional promo where he's like, you want to talk to the Switchblade, but you just got me. Like, you just got whatever his actual name is. I don't know if it's like Jake or Jason or some shit. And goes on to talk about how like he's dedicated his life to New Japan and he doesn't know where he's supposed to go now. And then like he doesn't really go on a spirit quest, but he then like gets like the Never Open Weight Championship, and then he starts the US of J tour and he disappears for a year, you know, because he doesn't want to do the whole quarantine travel thing in Japan. So there are starting to be some rumblings that maybe Jay wasn't so happy in New Japan and maybe Jay was going to go to WWE. Or maybe Jay was going to go to AEW, more likely WWE. But ultimately, Gato played this masterfully. And like Ryan said, Jay really helped establish New Japan, I think, across a lot of TVs. Because, yeah, look, New Japan strong, Impact. We're not exactly talking about, you know, world-beating promotions. However, a guy of Jay's caliber showing up on those shows, taking on all of these established names, coming into AEW, having a match there, it just like established his presence and established Bullet Club's presence, especially after recruiting Ace Austin at the end of the Best of Super Juniors and recruiting Chris Bay before that. And with House of Torture splitting off, like they're not fully split off, but they're not really Bullet Club anymore. They too sweet, but they didn't come out for Jay Celebration. Bullet Club has arguably not felt this strong since AJ was the leader. Jay perfectly embodies what Bullet Club is supposed to be. He really has helped almost single-handedly bring it back to the forefront of wrestling. And now he goes on to probably main event Forbidden Door. Continue establishing that connection, establishing New Japan's presence in America. And I with all due respect to Ospreay, who I think his heel turn has done wonders for him, and he's a great in-ring talent as well, Jay is the number one gaijin in New Japan. And like Jay says, he might just be the number one asset in professional wrestling.
His promo that he cut at the end, which I love the extensive use of fuck by any gaijin in their promos in New Japan.
Yep, always love that.
Completely reminded me of the Cleaner promo. And it's very, like, everybody was watching that Monday morning. Sunday morning, I guess. And good morning, Sunday morning. So, you know, they're really doing a good job with him because now he's
outstanding.
Not. And listen, if this partnership is going to be what it is, you have a worldwide superstar here, and it's going to be amazing.
One who lives in Florida, and therefore, like, and I'm not. Let's be clear about something. I am a New Japan fan before I'm an AEW fan, so I'm not like gonna sit here and be like, I hope Jay shows up in AEW all the time because you want him to feel special.
I hope my comment and like
no,
you know,
no.
They're gonna use it to New Japan's advantage. Like New Japan
exactly.
can use it to their advantage.
No. Precisely. My point is that with him having residence in Florida, if he decides to take... look, I'm not saying that you necessarily want your champion to just disappear from the promotion for like a month or whatever, but the fact that he can just like show up anywhere in America and have it like not be that difficult for him is a huge asset, regardless of whether he retains the title for that long or not. And that's the big part, is we don't know how long Jay keeps it for. I would say the smart money is he holds it through Wrestle Kingdom. At the very least, he will have it through the G1. No way he drops it before then. Mm-hmm. And having him as the representative of the championship throughout the G1 is really going to be awesome. This is great. This is after a few years of like some, we're not really sure how to feel about this decision making. I feel that Okada's reign as heavyweight champion, as world heavyweight champion after Shingo, I think Shingo and Okada really helped stabilize that title and give it that stability that it needed. And now the lineage being Shingo, Okada, Jay shows that Gato is understanding that, yeah, of course, Okada's your top guy. That's your ace. You want him holding it throughout your 50th anniversary. But it shows a trust in Jay that is well earned, and shows that Gato understands that, like, it's time to not necessarily take risks, but it's time to start being a little bit bold with who you're pushing.
How Gato and got his groove back.
Gato got his groove back. Also, no disrespect to Will Ospreay, who beat Sonata for the vacant IWGP US Championship after Juice Robinson had to vacate it because he had his appendix burst, and like, it's the most cursed title in wrestling. Anyway.
It's funny, too, because I think we had this discussion of, like, I think I kind of saw Ospreay getting it before Jay White did, but like, Jay White just went into the stratosphere the last year or so.
Well, Ospreay did get it before him, because remember, Ospreay beat Ibushi for it, but
I guess this spot is what I meant.
Ospreay was definitely solidified as a top guy, but maybe it's because he like was only establishing United Empire. I don't want to sit here and be like Ospreay didn't feel like he's now a main eventer, because he absolutely was and is. But there is just a different feel to Jay. Maybe it's because Jay is leading Bullet Club. Maybe when Bullet Club feels the strongest it has in years. Maybe it's because Jay just did this huge U.S. tour. Maybe it's just because Jay is a better promo than Ospreay. Maybe a little bit more charismatic. Whatever it is. Yeah, Jay is absolutely in that top spot. He's in a driver's seat, for sure.
I think it's not unfair to say that Jay White has paid his dues more to New Japan than
Ospreay. Oh, yeah. No, 100%. Like, Ospreay has moved to Japan and has done his business as well, but Jay is the homegrown talent that came up in the dojo in Japan, was a young lion, went on excursion. So, yeah, like, in that regard, Jay is as New Japan as New Japan gets, and like is a guy that you want to lead your company. And just also, Jay doesn't have like the out of the ring baggage that Ospreay does. You know?
You kind of forget about that, right?
Yeah, Ospreay, he's not the smartest bulb of the bunch, and he readily admits that. And also, like, that whole thing with the blackmailing that then turned out to not be a thing. It's just like, Will Ospreay puts his foot in his mouth a fucking lot. And Jay White sold Black Lives Matter Bullet Club shirts. So like, these are the two people you're dealing with. Jay, it's just different. And so as we build towards Forbidden Door, right? So Ospreay's actually going to be performing, might be performing right now. He's going to be taking on Dax Harwood in a one-on-one match at Road Rager, which is happening now.
What a turnaround, man. I was such a fucking hater on FTR. Now they became
so was I, but boy, howdy, you know? They have just really turned it on. It's not to say that they came into AEW and I didn't buy in. Like, I think their title reign was good, but something about when they started breaking off from the Pinnacle, just it worked. Once they started breaking away from Tully is really when it started, which is not to say like Tully was holding them back, but just they just hit a gear and then they just started going to the stratosphere, and that match with the Briscoes just really solidified them to me as like, oh, they're fucking superstars.
Right.
And like, there's no debate.
Like, the We Come From Memphis 1978 gimmick was getting a little stale. And I'm not, it's not like a disrespect to them, but it's like, don't tell me, show me show me what you're going to do in this new stratosphere of AEW. And I mean, you guys, like, they were getting lost in the shuffle, but they just, they completely rejuvenated themselves.
And their turn felt natural. And like, now they still have the old school feel, but
amped. Now they can Now they can be like, we time traveled from 1978 and we're fucking kicking ass.
Their theme is such a fucking banger.
Yeah. So you know what's interesting about that? Their theme comes from Giorgio Moroder, who is like a very influential DJ, Italian DJ from the 70s, and like who single-handedly like took disco from like that like cheesy orchestra level of it to like the MIDI and like the keyboard, like computerized aspect of it. So like, deep respect for that. I did not expect them to have that theme, but it's a fucking banger.
Is so that wasn't written for them. That was like, they bought the rights to that theme or whatever.
But it fits them so because,
oh no, it's literally like, that's some shit you would expect like Mr. Perfect to come
out. Exactly.
To, or, you know, fucking expect Arn to come out to. 100% it just works now. And Dax has really proven himself. Like, Dax is a unabashed super fan of Bret Hart, and so like, he takes a lot of spots from Bret, and so you make of that what you will, but Dax has definitely solidified himself as like a real standout singles wrestler, which is not something I ever expected from either Dax or Cash, not because they are bad wrestlers, but because, as counterintuitive as it sometimes might seem to people, wrestling fans or otherwise, it's not that easy to be a good tag team wrestler and a good singles wrestler. They are kind of unique skill sets that require coordination and teamwork and timing that it doesn't come naturally to everybody.
Yeah, because you have to establish your own moveset. You have to be different than your partner if you're going to go on singles. You know, think of like perfect examples, Edge and Christian, Matt and Jeff. Like, they both have to, when they come together, they are one, but separate, they both have to come up with their own move style. Like, Jeff was the high flyer, Hardy was more of the ground and pound.
Yeah,
like,
Matt,
you know,
did
I mean?
More suplexes and shit.
So yes, not an easy feat to do. My thing was that I thought they would never, like, you know, it's the both of us or the highway, but I'm glad that they, I'm glad AEW is giving them the ability to shine a little more, because, you know, the age old adage is that, you know, tag teams never last. You know, maybe I'm just jaded by WWE, but you know, it's good. This is a perfect way to utilize both without breaking them up.
Look, even beyond WWE, how many tag teams can you think of that like never split? Like, forgive me, because I'm, you know, ignorant of my old timey history, and so perhaps I'm mistaken, but like, off the top of my head, I don't know, like maybe like the Rock and Roll Express,
literally the only team I can think of. I'm sure there are others, but in terms of like, they didn't have extended, like, not even breaking up, but I went to one territory, I went to one brand, I went to WCW, you went to WWE. I can't really think of another. Maybe it's because I just associate them, but I can't think of another team that has that had like a continuation like that.
Yeah, like maybe I can only think of certain old school teams. Like, maybe, I don't know, like, did the Freebirds ever like have a feud with one another?
Yeah, I can't, you know, obviously Michael Hayes was the one to come out of that on top, but I can't recall if maybe they split or.
Yeah, it's only certain old timey teams that I'm like, well, I only really ever remember them together, like the Road Warriors or Rock and Roll Express, like where you know them as the tag team and they never really had a prolonged feud. Like I said, any old school fans out there that can correct
it should have been the Road Warriors, but even like, you know, Vince fucked around with that and made fucking poor Hawk a drunk and fall off the Titantron.
Right. right. So. I really do respect FTR for being like, we're not saying we won't like have singles matches, and you know, they faced each other in the Owen tournament. But you know, I respect that they were like, no, you're not breaking us up. That's not what we're into, that we don't want to do that. And it's worked for them. And they are putting themselves on the Mount Rushmore of legendary tag teams with each accomplishment. So it all brings us to Forbidden Door, which, like I said, right now, there's not a huge... There's seeds. There's seeds all over the place for what could happen.
Let's get past the narrative, though, because people are already fucking saying, like, this is not what I was promised. This is not what I made up in my head, and it's not happening. Let's establish two things. First off, Triple A. And,
The
Mexican promotions aren't letting their wrestlers perform in this.
Not letting the Lucha Bros show up. Triple A, like Conan said, Triple A had nothing to do with it. But the reality is, like, it's because New Japan works with CMLL and Triple A fucking hates CMLL. So the Lucha Brothers not being able to show up is a loss, but you could have understood it. Andrade not getting to, like, reunite with Naito after he brings in Rush is, like, that fucking sucks. And Andrade... I was really hoping that Andrade would have been, was he ever going to be? No, I'm sorry, he wasn't. But, like, Andrade should have been on that.
He should have been on the card. They fucked themselves over now because there's no way in hell he's not going to go back there. He's going to go back there.
And it's the same thing with, like, Dragon Lee can't show up at New Japan or at this because, like, of his work with Triple S. It sucks. It's a real fucking bummer. But... in spite of that, look, here's what we do know. What we do know is we're getting Jon Moxley versus Hiroshi Tanahashi for the interim AEW World Championship. We do know that AEW has announced a new singles title called the All Atlantic Championship, despite the fact that some of the people are from Japan, in which you're going to get a four-way match at Forbidden Door. It's going to be Pac, who went over on Buddy Matthew, and all the competitors in it are from different countries. None of which are the United States. Pac went over on Buddy Matthews in, like, a really, really great match. And then he's going to be taking on either Malachi Black or Penta, which smart money's on Malachi, especially because Penta can't show up. Miro or Ethan Page. I'm sorry, All Ego. You are about to be all broken.
Miro, baby.
And then on the New Japan side, they have a little tournament where it's going to be Tomoaki Hanma versus Clark Connors, and then Tomohiro Ishii and Yoshinobu Kanemaru. And the winners of those matches will face each other, and the winner of that will go on to Forbidden Door. This is almost certainly going to be Ishii. I could see them swerve us and give it to Clark Connors, but I think what you're going to see is Clark Connors will beat Honma, Ishii will beat Kanemaru, Ishii and Clark Connors will have a hard-hitting match, and Ishii will go over because he's the one most familiar to the
crowd. Yeah, they need the
crowd.
Name. Let Clark Connors, like, have a hell of a match, though, just to...
Yeah, I love Clark Connors, the Wild Rhino. Like, he's really fucking spectacular. New Japan is pushing him. They're starting to, but yeah, this is Ishii.
Gotta have the Pitbull on the card.
Gotta have the Stone Pitbull. So... A lot of people are like, did we really need, like, another singles belt? And no, we didn't. However, and this is entirely headcanon, but if the purpose of the All Atlantic Championship is that it is, like, a global championship, like a true world championship, where the whole point is it only gets defended against people from other countries, which is similar to, there's a Stardom belt that does that. Which one is it? Which one of their belts is that? Championships.
And I think
as you go on, I'm gonna look this up.
Yeah, as you look that up, Tony got ahead of all that talk and said, yes, I think that's what he wants to focus on. And you know, I think it's kind of needed in AEW because you do have a lot of wrestlers that are not, you know, outside of America. And, you know, it's, they have to do something. They don't want to get lost in the shuffle because, you know, the TNT belt, you know, on an individual who can't wrestle currently. Mm. And, like, the TNT belt, you want to reserve for, like, not the young guns, but you want to reserve that for, like, you know, the up and comers. Like, this belt, like, how many times is Miro going to go after the TNT belt? They're not going to have him go after the heavyweight championship, right? So yeah. This is a perfect way for him to get into that. The same goes yes. for Pac, who, you know,
he needs something. He's deserved yeah. it. He's deserved it since day one. So the title that I'm thinking of is the SWA World Championship, also referred to internationally as the SWA Undisputed World Women's Championship. This title in Stardom, that this is what I was thinking of. The rules of the championship state that only wrestlers from countries other than the reigning champions can challenge for it. And the people that won this were Io Shirai, Toni Storm, Itami Hayashishida, Jamie Hayter, Bea Priestley, Mayu Iwatani. So point being, if they use this title kind of more like that, not necessarily with the same stipulation, but like this is your traveling championship. This is the championship that maybe goes to New Japan or Rev Pro or maybe goes somewhere else. Then I'm on board with that. And like you said, ultimately, there's only so much that you, there's a lot of talent and a lot of people that need something to do. And the trios title will help. But this is a way to help give people something to do. It can be and should be argued that another men's title means even less time for the women, which is absolutely
that's Tony's problem.
It will not be a problem as long as this title is not like regularly defended on Dynamite. As long as it's a title that like is, this is the traveling one. It doesn't really get fought on Dynamites unless mm-hmm. somebody's on an excursion. Then it won't be a big deal.
You know, it's a great way of looking at it. Make it your in-house NWA title.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't have NWA come into the fold, make it like a title like that, where it's
yep.
it serves its purpose to house all the different companies that AEW now associates itself
yes.
with.
Perfect. Yeah, exactly. Have this be the title that people from AAA or New Japan or Impact or whatever come and challenge for. So, like I said, that's all that's announced. However, the kernels are laid for several matches. In all likelihood, you are going to get a Ring of Honor, maybe Ring of Honor IWGP heavyweight tag team title unification match, not unification, but winner takes all match. It will at least be FTR versus United Empire after United Empire interrupted FTR and Roppongi Vice's match. But more likely, I think you're probably going to get FTR, Roppongi Vice, and United Empire in a three-way for at least one of those belts. Rocky also made it a point to say that he had never gotten a heavyweight, had gotten the IWGP heavyweight tag team titles, so also something that they could go for as an angle. Other angles that they're starting to lay kernels for, of course, Hangman called out Okada, saying, I want to challenge for the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship. Adam Cole came out and said that you don't know Okada wins. It could be Jay White, which it was. You are going to get some interplay between Jay White, Adam Cole, Hangman Adam Page, and Kazuchika Okada. You shouldn't get your hopes up necessarily for singles matches, so you really shouldn't be surprised if you like get Hangman and Okada versus Jay White and Adam Cole, but bitch more. Do you really not want to see that? Like, I don't love that they're shoehorning Adam Cole into this when he really doesn't need to be there, but whatever. You could potentially get Okada versus Adam Cole and Hangman versus Jay White, but like I said, you'd be spoiling yourself, so don't presume anything. As for anything else that happens, I'm sure we'll find out more tonight and we'll find out more next week. But yeah, there's a lot to sort through. We don't know who is and isn't going to show up. And you know what, Ryan, honestly, as long as you've announced Jay White and Okada and Hangman Adam Page and, you know, Will Ospreay and Tanahashi, look, man, whoever else shows up is fucking gravy. You're already getting like some of the biggest names in New Japan. Unfortunately, you're not going to get Ibushi.
Well, who knows what the fuck is going on there?
Yeah, it's its own weird saga. I ain't touching it anymore. But
let's be honest, Kenny's not here. So, I mean, we're already being robbed of the greatest crossover star in New Japan history. So,
however, I understand I'm setting myself up for failure here and for disappointment. I refuse to believe that the first ever joint AEW New Japan crossover does not involve Kenny Omega coming out.
Oh,
he
yeah.
He will not wrestle, but I refuse to accept that Kenny Omega doesn't show up to, like, look at somebody. Could be Jay, could be Okada, could be some, could be Ishii, whatever. Like, he is going to come out. He has to. But Kenny is genuinely recovering from a fuck ton of shit, so, like, he yeah. also might not. And that's fine if he doesn't.
My point being was, one of our few commandments here on the show is let people enjoy things.
Let people
and
enjoy things.
And to you, the listener, if you're having doubts about this show, the way it's going to play out, listen, this is a great thing. This is what we've been dreaming about for the last fucking 4 years. So, I mean, just let's see what happens.
Isn't that really the fucking shit of it all? It literally is. AEW fans decided from day one that obviously they're going to partner with New Japan. And then everybody's like, nope, not happening. Not isn't going to happen. Oh, maybe it'll happen. Who knows if it's going to happen? Then Kenta shows up. The roof explodes. And now we're at the point, 2022, where in front of a live sold out audience in the United Center, you're going to get exactly what you asked for. And you're still going to find a way to complain about it because you're all ninnies. You're just fickle.
Fickle.
Change it.
Me.
Oh, also, ZSJ called out Brian Danielson.
Yeah. We're forgetting
maybe
that
you'll
nugget.
Get fucking ZSJ Danielson.
It's going to be fucking awesome.
It's going to be so cool. I'm so excited. I will be watching it. I am just through the roof and over the moon. The last thing to talk about with New Japan.
Oh,
is
one hot take I just wanted to mention.
Okay, what's your hot take?
Kind of glad CM Punk broke his foot.
Okay, so.
What's a topic we always discuss here? Things in wrestling that were on the fly that happened for the better. This is for the better. Trust me. Even if CM Punk wasn't hurt, because like he was not losing that belt. So I mean, at least we have the ability to view this
intrigue.
Right, we have the ability to view this match of we don't know who's going to win, and that is what's most important for this show. Because obviously, there's going to be protected wrestlers here that. New Japan's not going to let this guy go over.
Yep.
AEW's not going to let this guy go over.
Yep.
But with this case, in this scenario, because of the meta aspect of it that Moxley has been referring to this for the last, God, since he's gotten there. Well, since New Japan has been referenced and canon in AEW, he's been talking about a Tana match. So he deserves this.
So first off.
Plus it should be CM Punk Kenta.
First off, it is fucked up, but like. I did text Kyle and was like, oh no, CM Punk broke his foot. Look. Let's not be fucking monsters here. Like, a man got injured.
I know,
that sucks. It was the night after he won a title. It's fucking terrible. And it happened because he jumped into the crowd excitedly.
Like, plus, he's the intern belt. It's not like they took it off him.
It sucks. I wish him the speediest of recoveries. And I look forward to whatever their reign was planned. But. In kayfabe, fuck CM Punk. Hangman's my boy. Fuck that scumbag. I don't trust him. And go eat paste. Here's the thing. Does anybody actually think Hiroshi Tanahashi beats Jon Moxley? No. But like Ryan said, there's that part of you in the back, right? Because the big reason that you would think he's not is because, as I was about to say, the G1 Climax 32 has been announced, and it's going to be happening in August. And it is a 28-man field, 4 blocks of 7. Not quite sure how I feel about 4 blocks, but love 28 people. And real quick, the entrants are Okada, Tanahashi, Naito, Hiroki Goto, Tama Tonga, Shingo Takagi, Chase Owens, Bad Luck Fale, Yujiro Takahashi, Evil, Tom Lawler, first ever time. Juice Robinson. Jonah, first ever time. Yoshihashi. Toriyanu. Tomohiro Ishii. Jeff Cobb. Great O'Conn. Will Ospreay. Aaron Hinare. Sanada. Jay White, first time in 2 years. Kenta, coming back finally. El Fantasmo, perhaps moving up to heavyweight for the first time. Taichi, Zack Sabre Jr., David Finlay in his first time ever, and the return of the Murder Hawk monster, Lance Archer, who got a tremendous, tremendous pop by the Japanese crowd. They love him. So,
yeah, because like, you know, people are like, hey, Lance Archer, out of all the people that you could have put on, they love him. They love him. Love him, dude.
Also, that would just tell me that you are completely ignorant of this company, because if you watched the last G1 he was in, like it was right before the pandemic, it was 2-3 years ago, he was over as fuck and he was so good. He was a guy that, like, I didn't know who he was, and then I'm doing my research and I'm like, Lance, he used to be Lance Hoyt in TNA. Who is this guy? Ridiculous. So I'm like, whatever, I don't care about him. So good in that. Yep. And like, so the Japanese love them. A big fucking gaijin, and good for him. I am bummed that, like, look, no disrespect to Jonah, who will probably work this style really well, but like, one of New Japan's homegrown stars from the LA Dojo, Carl Fredericks, not too fucking happy he's not being included, and Jonah didn't really need to be there. Tom Lawler, however, is a tremendous entry here and will be great. And I think ELP is going to be so much fun in this.
Sorry.
And now you're going to get, yeah.
Is Jonah Bronson Reed?
Bronson Reed, yes.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm glad that he's being used, because fucking kind of got the fucking short end of the stick in WWE. I thought they were going to.
I mean, he's an impact, and like, he's doing some fun stuff. He had a fun match with Morrissey right before Morrissey left. But yeah, I mean, I think there are better people New Japan could have picked, but he is probably going to be a lot of fun in this. So I'm not really that mad about it. But point being, right, to the point earlier, the smart money is on Jon Moxley, A, because he's Jon Moxley, but B, because this is in August. Forbidden Doors at the end of June. Do you really think that Tanahashi is going to stick around for a month, and then that AEW is going to let their interim championship go away? Well, think about it this way. If CM Punk is champion and you announce an interim champion, and therefore everybody's a little bit aware that this is like not your world championship, does it maybe make sense to put it on the biggest Japanese star of the past 30 years and put it in the G1? You would never get the AEW title in the G1. Never. Why? Tony Khan would never let that happen. I'm sorry. He wouldn't. But the interim championship, well, that presents a unique opportunity, doesn't it? Look, don't get your hopes up. This is almost certainly going to be Moxley, and he will deserve it, and his reunification match with CM Punk will bang. But this, I think, was to Ryan's point. It's just fun to think about even an inkling of a chance that Hiroshi Tanahashi could be an AEW champion and take that championship to the G1. It's just fun to even be able to think about.
Not will he, can he?
Can he? That's right.
You know, I mean, Tanahashi's not getting younger, so I would like to see him do one American run in some degree. You know, I think he deserves it. So I think it would be pretty cool.
Because, like, here's a complete hypothetical that I'm making up because I know nothing. Let's say that Tony Khan says, all right, Gato, here's the deal. Tanahashi wins the title over Moxley. He comes on Dynamite up until the G1, goes to the G1, comes back after that, and then either has his match against CM Punk if CM Punk's schedule is there, or because he's obviously not going to win the G1, he comes back to America for a little bit. Will Gato, while New Japan desperately needs to sell tickets, let Tanahashi go? Probably not. Will Tony Khan let his interim champion be Tanahashi and disappear for a month plus? Probably not. But I see a world in which I could see them coming to the agreement that would be mutually beneficial for both parties.
Yeah. Also, like, if you look at the roster, it's like, who could we let go over there for a little bit? And I think Tanahashi's definitely...
Exactly.
You know?
Who could be a big enough deal to warrant this type of opportunity, but at the same time doesn't need to be a marquee name on every single event. It's a great point, especially because after the G1, once you get there, you got New Japan Road right now, then you got the G1, and I'm sorry, it's starting in July. So Tanahashi would basically do like two Dynamites and then he'd be done August 18th. And then the only thing they've got scheduled right now is New Japan Strong in July. So I forget what usually comes right before Wrestle Kingdom. I don't remember if it's like Genesis or some Sakura Genesis. I'm not sure.
The December event, right?
Yeah, I don't remember what it is. But either way, he is a guy that, like, well, you could let him go after the G1. That'd be fine. And for Tony, hey, man, this title is getting international exposure against some of the biggest names in wrestling. And it's an interim title. I mean, we'll just elevate the TNT championship and there's another singles championship we introduced. So
plus, it's not like have the world championship like fought on Dynamite. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's not, the champion is not there every single week. There were weeks where Hangman didn't show up. There were weeks where Jericho, probably not Jericho, he was there almost all the time. There were weeks where like Kenny wasn't there. So yeah, and it certainly wasn't defended. So
yeah, and I'll gladly sacrifice that in place of a lame promo that's going to be setting up a match 3 months from now.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they'll definitely have, like, tonight is a pay-per-view level Dynamite. They'll definitely have another one of those at some point, and then you have All Out. So, I mean, that's Labor Day weekend, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, perfect time to do it now.
I think it really all boils down to what Punk's timeline is. If Punk's timeline slots in anywhere, like, within 3 months, and like I said, I don't remember if his foot's, like, broken or if it's worse, so
I don't think it was that dramatic.
Yeah, I don't know how severe it was. I know he got surgery on it. But point being, if it was the type of injury, let's see, there was a positive update 6 hours ago. Tony Khan said that the timetable he's feeling pretty optimistic about. Of course, it's just like corporate speak. But either way, if it's not that serious and it's like 2-3 months, then fuck it. Let Tanahashi win it. Go take it to the G1. And then Punk comes back and you either do that for All Out, because then you have Punk back and now you're going to have to reunify those titles. Or you build towards a pay-per-view level Dynamite, or you build towards All Out. So I think either way it can work. All Out would be perfect, actually. If he can come back in time for All Out, that would be the timetable where I think it would make sense for you, where I could see Tanahashi winning. But this is all idle speculation, but it is just the fact that we can do it. And sometimes wrestling takes these weird turns, and sometimes it ends up creating something you didn't expect. And I love that. And I just love that we're in that period.
Yep.
Also, Impact's building towards Slammiversary, which, when is that? It's going to be June 19th. Right now, I don't think they've announced a heavyweight title match, but Sami Callihan is back now. Oh, no, here it is. It's going to be Josh Alexander versus Eric Young for the Impact World Championship. They're bringing back the Reverse Battle Royal, which is fun. Rich Swann's going to take on Brian Myers for the digital media title. Ace Austin's going to be taking on Kenny King, Speedball, Mike Bailey, Trey Miguel, Jack Evans, and Alex Zane for the X Division title. Tasha Steeles is going to be taking on Chelsea Green, Deonna Purrazzo, Jordynne Grace, and Mia Yim, who has come back at last for the Queen of the Mountain match for the Knockouts Championship. The Briscoes will be taking on the Good Brothers for the Impact World Tag Team Championship. The team of the Impact Originals, which is Alex Shelley, Chris Sabin, Frankie Kazarian, TBA and TBA versus Honor No More, Eddie Edwards, Matt Taven, Mike Bennett, PCO, and Vincent in a 10-man tag. Sami Callihan versus Moose in a Monsters Ball match, which is I don't really know what it is. It's like a hardcore match where people are in the dark, I think, maybe. And then the influence of Madison Rayne and Tennille Dashwood will be taking on Rosemary and Taya Valkyrie for the Impact Knockouts Tag Team Championship. I haven't been keeping up with Impact, but Josh Alexander and Eric Young, longstanding beef. Sami Callihan had his ankle broken by Moose 6 months ago, so that's the purpose of that match. The X Division's just always a shit ton of fun. The Briscoes and Good Brothers kind of be going at one another for a while. Frankie Kazarian coming back to Impact to tag up with the Motor City Machine Guns is super cool. And, for you know, maybe means that Christopher Daniels comes back. That would be a whole lot of fun. What was their team in Impact called again?
Who is this?
Kazarian and Christopher Daniels.
SCU?
No. Was it? They had a tag team name that I don't think was SCU. It's when he was with Christopher. Bad Influence.
The Addiction. Oh, okay. Oh, but yeah, Addiction.
Was it the Addiction?
Yeah. Well, it formerly known as Bad Influence.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. So there you go. Anyway, yeah, that's cool. But you know, we'll talk about it later. So, heavy episode filled with idle speculation and a lot of chatter from yours truly, and just so much stuff going on. I've said it one time, Ryan, I'll say it 1,000 times. This is the most exciting time to be a wrestling fan in forever.
Yeah.
Just so much fun.
Should be a good summer. Usually a dead time for wrestling.
No longer. Isn't SummerSlam being held at a weird time? Isn't it like July this year?
The way it fell this year, it's going to be on July 31st. But I mean, in years past, it was on like August 4th. So it's not, it's kind of like those couple of times where WrestleMania was in March as opposed to April.
Uh-huh. And when is Money in the Bank?
Money in the Bank is this Sunday?
No.
Hold on.
No way.
No, it's not. Sorry. It's soon. It is July 2nd.
Oh, still pretty soon.
Which that's pretty close then, because they're going to, that's weird. Yeah, okay, that's the way it falls. Yeah, because it's going to be 5 weeks almost before that. So that's why they're not going to wait that long.
Oh, my Lord. So, Ryan, that means that our next episode is going to be talking about Forbidden Door leading straight into Money in the Bank. Who's luckier than you four? Nobody. Nobody is. So, yeah, great time to be a wrestling fan. This summer is just going to be so good. Forbidden Door, G1 in the summer again. Money in the Bank, which is always a fun time. SummerSlam, which you hope is a fun time, but I guess who knows. Just, you know, a lot of great shit happening and just really looking forward to all of it. And hopefully, like, the long-awaited return of Ring of Honor. I have to think that's happening sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
Yeah. Big shit. So, before we get to final segments, Ryan, any final thoughts on any of this?
On any of the news or just
or anything events? Anything we missed?
I know you don't want to talk about it, but I mean, I wanted to talk about it from the aspect of...
Oh, you're right. No. We do need to talk about
this. And like, just so, okay. A lot of people found out Monday that Jeff got into another incident.
Jeff Hardy, that
involving
is.
His addiction.
Call it what it is, Ryan. He got caught drunk driving again.
Right. This is not a matter of addiction. This is a matter of just being really a fucking sociopath. And it's not good. And I know we all love Jeff, but the dude is probably going to jail. So I want everybody to realize that. And, you know, it's not a matter of when he's going to come back. Like, Jeff may never come back, and that's probably going to save his life. But a lot of unfair hay got tossed in Matt, because sure, is Matt going to bat for Jeff to come over to AEW? Was there a little shady wording going on when they were talking about when Jeff left WWE? And forget all of that. You know, as someone who's experienced addiction, Matt is not Jeff's caretaker. I've witnessed individuals, you know, staying with them until the moment they fell deep asleep. And then I've done what I could do in that moment. I leave, and then I find out the next day that they went to the bar at 3 a.m. That's not how it works, guys. So I hope that if you had that sentiment about it, life is not like that, unfortunately. And, you know, to the people that feel responsible to, because there's a lot of people out there that, you know, they want to save individuals. I'm always one of those people, because there are individuals in this world that let people just to, you know, they've done, they wipe their hands. You can only go so far with these people. So I hope he's able to overcome this, because we, you know, a lot of people were joking around smarkingly, like, about Sunny a couple weeks ago when she killed a man driving drunk. Jeff was not driving drunk at 3 a.m. down some back alley road in North Carolina. He was driving in Orlando in the morning, and there were many calls made to the police station about his actions, and a lot of people could have died. So just wanted to, we don't have to go in depth about, you know, we were joking around like many news this week. Obviously Vince saved us from that. But yeah. Listen, I mean, that's just the way it goes, guys. It's not Matt's fault. So just
no.
Let's stop that narrative.
I, as somebody that works with addiction intimately as part of my job, of course there are people that legitimately are you know, that egg addicts on, that are bad influences. But here's the thing. Matt Hardy giving like a public statement of support for his brother and like wanting to try to give his brother chances in this industry that they grew up in is not the same as Matt Hardy condones Jeff Hardy drinking. And like, anybody who tries to make that level of an assumption on people you do not know is a fucking idiot. Or, to be less harsh, woefully ignorant of the way addiction works, the way that family support works for addiction, and literally anything related to it. Addicts make their own decisions. Addicts make those decisions born from chemical needs, from a fundamental change in their brain chemistry that forces this on them. That being said, addicts also have to take responsibility for their actions. Jeff Hardy drove drunk in Orlando in the morning and could have killed people. And this is like, what, his third, fourth, fifth time doing this? Jeff's troubles are well documented. He should not be shamed for being an addict. He should be shamed for almost killing people and the reckless endangerment of innocent lives because of his, frankly, wanton disinterest of those around him. To put any of that on any person that is not Jeff Hardy is ridiculous. You don't know, you know, and how many times do we say this on this show? You don't know these people. You don't know them. You don't know these millionaires and billionaires. You don't know these athletes, these celebrities. They're people on your TV, on your computer screen, on a podcast. You don't know them. You need to stop thinking you know them because you used to do swanton bombs onto your teddy bear when you were 5. You need to stop thinking that because you used to fucking come out to the Hardy Boys theme, that all of a sudden you get to go to Matt Hardy's wife and be like, you're disrespectful because you did a tick. Like, you don't know these people. And like, the only person that should be being shamed publicly is Jeff Hardy for his wanton disinterest of the public health. Outside of that, you don't know jack about Jack. You don't know shit about Matt. And like, you need to suck it up and admit that. And I would recommend for anybody that is of that persuasion or thinks that it's just as simple as Jeff Hardy should stop drinking or Jeff Hardy should just not be in wrestling, like, you don't know it. Hope the man gets better. Be glad that he didn't kill anybody. And if you don't want to see him on your TV ever again, then I completely understand that. That's fine. I don't really want to see him on my TV either. To me, it seems pretty clear that, like, this is not, like, this lifestyle doesn't work for him. But, like, I suggest you start, you maybe go read a couple of articles from former addicts, from people that work with addiction, and, like, see how difficult it is for these people and their families before you start throwing fucking stones all over the place. We get way too judgmental about this shit. And I don't mean to soapbox, but this is a situation near and dear to me. This is something that I deal with on a regular basis, and I see the real human cost and the real human lives affected by this. And it just bothers me that people think that because somebody's a celebrity, they get to say whatever vile shit they want, or similarly think that they know these people and that they get to fucking dispense life advice from their goddamn ivory towers.
Yeah, and, you know, as Damien always tells me, kill your idols. They're not your friends. I mean, obviously, we want these people who are good to be good humans, but life doesn't work out like that. Not even these individuals. You'll deal with this in your family and friends. You know, it's an unfortunate thing in life. Just, you know, be humble about it. That's all we want to say.
Be humble about it. That's exactly right. If you think Jeff deserves to go to jail, fine. If you think Jeff deserves a second chance, fine. It, whatever you think is what you think. It doesn't give you the right to go on Twitter and start fucking harassing his family as if, like, you don't know what Matt Hardy does and doesn't do. You don't know what his wife does and doesn't do. And, like, these are public figures. Like, they have fucking kids. I'm not expecting you to have sympathy for the, like, you know, drug and alcohol addled millionaire. But, like, have some sympathy for the people this affects. Have right. some gratitude that nobody died from it. And, like, hate him, love him, I don't care. Leave this fucking family out of it and just, like, think before you say shit like this. It's just, it's bothersome. It bothers me that Matt Hardy has to make any statement at all about it. It's not his fucking, that's his brother. He doesn't owe any of you anything. Like, what did people want him to do? Did people want him to fucking drag Jeff out onto fucking dynamite and, like, do a twist of fate onto a ladder? Did they want him to, like, excoriate him on Twitter and, like, you know, be like, I'm officially done with, like, what did people want from him?
I mean, like, obviously, scumbags exist in the fandom, okay?
Bad fandom. But Star Wars and professional wrestling. Bad fandoms.
The fact that the first response was Matt, what the hell, not Jeff, what the hell. Like, really, just it set something off of me. I didn't really like it. Yeah, like, really, honestly.
What are you
especially
doing?
Since and like it, what we went through. Like, you know, we saw somebody like Scott Hall pass away, and Scott Hall would have been the first person to tell you like exactly what we're espousing right here, that you are responsible for you. So,
and like, look, I understand the idea that like Tony Khan shouldn't have given him, Tony Khan put him in irresponsible spots and Tony Khan shouldn't have hired him. And look, honestly, I think those are all valid critiques and criticisms, but just like, I don't think it's fair to blame like Vince McMahon. Or like, I don't think it's fair to blame Eric Bischoff for like Jeff Hardy in TNA. It's not fair to blame Tony Khan for Jeff Hardy in AEW.
No, Tony's running a fucking company, guys. Like, this, it's not as cut and dry as this.
Honestly, that's the thing. Like, did the Tony stans like forget that he's a billionaire running a business and he doesn't give a shit about this? And like, Jeff Hardy will make money, and that's why he brought him in.
Also, the story changed so many times from when we first heard it on Monday. It's like, that's what Tony's probably trying to fucking pinpoint. It's like, all right, Jeff, tell me exactly what the fuck happened. And I think, you know, Tony feels somewhat responsible, is giving him rehab, and then that's it. As soon as he completes it, like I said, we have the unfortunate reality that he may be going to jail. And one last thing. Damien brought up a good point when he referenced Victory Road from 2011. I'm not calling Jeff a bad... Let me phrase it this way. We have given Jeff so many chances because we love this man, and there's not a lot of people who have been given these many chances in wrestling.
Scott Hall didn't get this many chances.
Exactly.
And like, let's be honest, he at one point was just as fucking over as Jeff Hardy was
and
in multiple companies.
He's lucky for the individual that he is, because he should have been blacklisted, honestly, after that event.
Oh my God. After he pulled what he pulled with Sting, of all people, like, he really is lucky he ever got a job again. He's lucky that wrestling is this, like, boys club where, like, if you do bad things, it doesn't really matter because you can always come back, you know? Right. But to put the shoe on the other foot, I also don't want to fucking hear people talking about, like, oh, see, like, you know, this is, like, people talked about, like, Vince and, like, oh, I can't believe Vince, like, gave this addict a drug test. Like, what? What the fuck? Like, look, man, this ain't Owen. This ain't Benoit. This is addiction. This doesn't fall on Vince McMahon or Tony Khan unless they literally pump these guys full of it themselves.
Right.
And, like, these companies don't actually owe anything to these people. That's where the whole idea of, like, you should really have, like, universal healthcare and better mental health and substance abuse, like, you know, federally publicly funded things so that companies don't have to do shit like this. But you exist in the shit tier society you do. They don't have to do shit for shit. They chose to offer Jeff rehab. He refused. He goes to AEW. He does this. Tony chooses to offer rehab. He should be fucking glad they're doing that. Like, again, you don't know Tony Khan. You don't know Vince McMahon. You don't know Jeff Hardy. You don't know Matt Hardy. You don't know any of these people. Like, he's fucked up for doing shit like this. Just like Jimmy Uso is fucked up for doing shit like this. Be thankful nobody died. Leave their families alone. Go fucking go watch Kawada versus Misawa on YouTube and shut the fuck up.
Yeah. That's what it is.
That's my rant of the week. So Ryan, you been listening to anything lately?
I have. I wanted to give a shout out to our boy, Mr. Dez, for coming out with his single with his band Career Day, No Problem.
Ah, yes.
Streaming everywhere. Their debut album, Where We've Always Been, will be coming out on the 12th of August. So please check that out. You referenced her a couple of episodes ago. I've been on a real Phoebe Bridgers kick.
Uh-huh.
She's really great, man. She's playing tomorrow night at Forest Hills. If you're going to that, you're very lucky. I wanted to go, but maybe we should go see her next time she comes around.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw Metallica 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
I haven't gotten a chance to talk to you about it, but that was just
Colin.
They really just fucking so good. So good. It's like seeing the fucking Beatles, man.
Hot take. James Hetfield exactly the same as John Lennon. Right, that's what Ryan's telling you all.
No, that's what Damien is telling you.
That's what Ryan said just now. He said James Hetfield is literally John Lennon.
Yep, that's exactly what I said.
That's what he said.
Yep.
Yeah, I haven't gotten a chance to see Metallica yet. I do look forward to the day that I can. But speaking of large stage productions, I don't ask me why this is where I've been going as of late, but I have been on a massive, massive Rammstein kick.
Nice.
I am seeing
them.
There's
a band I haven't seen.
I'm seeing them in, I think, at Citi Field in September, and I'm really looking forward to that.
It was wow, they're playing, like, Citi Field? Holy shit.
It was, like, set up pre-pandemic, and now we're here.
I just can't believe they did what they did at Jones Beach.
What did they do at Jones Beach?
I mean, like, they had the full set at Jones Beach with, like, the miss, like...
Oh, did they have, like, the towers and shit?
Brusha said that he has never felt more unsafe, like more afraid at a concert. Just absolutely awesome, because they need to play these stadiums to do what they do, but the fact that they were able to pack it in tiny ass Jones Beach is just incredible. I wish I went to that show.
They have a new album out called Zeit, which is a lot of fun. It's very sonically distinct from a lot of their other shit. However, I will be giving a shout out to my personal favorite album of theirs and an absolute titan of new metal, their 2001 masterpiece, Mutter, featuring some of Rammstein's biggest hits, Mein Herz brennt, Ich will, Feuerfrei, which was the song featured in Triple X. Just a mammoth album. Mein Herz brennt is like one of the most powerfully simple songs ever written. The orchestral compositions, and Till Lindemann has to be like, I don't know, man. I think I might call him one of the most underrated vocalists of metal, because I feel like I never see him get mentioned in like best metal vocalist.
He's sort of his own universe. List.
There is not a single, I look at him the same way that I look at like Jonathan Davis, in where you can think whatever you want about their like music, but nobody sounds and like them, and nobody can do what they
Peter
do.
Peter Steele is also a great example too. It's like,
yeah.
I'm not even going to bother ranking him because he's just his own human.
He's his own thing. Till Lindemann has this, just like how low his voice can get, how fucking scary he sounds, how harsh all of his accents and roles are. Like, he's just a special being. Yeah. And I look forward to having a flamethrower blown at me when I see them.
Have fun, man.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Yes.
Did you have anything else before I send you the little
ditty? No. Send a ditty away. Also, Bo Burnham did release his Inside outtakes recently, and they're great, and you should watch it on YouTube. Also, I haven't said this. I don't know if anyone else has, but do you know what happened, listeners? Uh-oh. Filthy fucking Casuals did it again. Another superstar born out of the ranks of people that they like, Bryce Donovan, create a pro wrestling heavyweight championship. We did talk about it, but just want to remind everybody again, we are literally the smartest people in the world. Nobody knows the sport like us. Not Prichard, not Bischoff, not Jericho, not Bully Ray. It's us and us alone, and Chris Sweeney. That's it. It's only us.
That's right. Damien is calling himself the Bully Ray of podcasting.
I'm the Devon, I'd like to think.
He's a fucking piece of shit, and he deserves everything that's coming to him.
Oh, God. All right. Who do we got here? Oh, well, that's Jay White. That's too easy.
Oh, yeah. No, I wanted to. It was just
wow,
too
young
good.
Lion, young Lion Jay, though. My God, what a look. Although honestly, I opened it quickly enough where I was like, oh, that's Sean Spears. Oh wait, no, that's not Sean Spears. This must have been Jay right before he left on excursion when he was still a young lion.
Mm-hmm.
He mentioned in his promo after winning the title that almost 6 years to the day back in 2016, at Osaka Joe Hall, he wrestled his final match as a young lion. So good old Jay. Good old baby face Jay. He's such a pretty lad.
But just another example of where a beard helps a man so much.
Oh, my God. Like, people do, like, some people like the original Switchblade look, the knife pervert look as Trent booked it, where he's just clean shaven, scary. But his look now, that's the fucking look. The beard, the hair. Oh, God. It just all works so much better. He goes from, like, you're like talented, but I can't really take you seriously, to like, oh, you're so scary.
Yeah.
Great. Good. I love a lob, Ryan. Thank you for that. Really boosted my confidence.
You deserve one after we took a break the last couple of weeks.
Thank you. So folks, that concludes our big wrap up. I did have like a segment planned, but, I have something planned for next week after we talk about, or not next week, but after Forbidden Door and after Money in the Bank, I do have something planned. So won't all be round up next episode, but lots of big shit. Go tune in to the things that make you happy. Just a great time to be a wrestling fan, unless you like the Hardy Boys. So for Ryan, for myself, this has been the most electrifying must-listen-to podcast in sports entertainment. This has been FFC.